From the latest hip-hop beats to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
And now your host, Rita.
Welcome back, everyone, for another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio, powered by Black Ivy Media. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I hope you guys are striving, thriving, and surviving in these corona-infested streets. So first of all, happy Sunday, everyone. Happy start of the new week. But more importantly, happy Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to all of the fathers that are out there taking care of their kids, or at least making an effort to do so. We truly appreciate you. And it's summer solstice. So for those of you who are into the zodiacs and into all this other stuff, June 21st, which is actually tomorrow, but whatever, marks the first day of summer. It is now summer solstice. We are in this season. I really do hope that the summer becomes a real summer and we don't get played with crazy weather. But summer, although I hate the heat, I do not like the heat at all. I'm a 65 to 75, maybe 77 degree weather girl. Anything above that, I am running for the hills. But I do enjoy the relaxation of summer. I enjoy the laid backness of summer. I enjoy the get togetherness of summer. So I really do hope that this summer season falls favorably upon us, since the last summer was obviously a doozy. Either way, today we have a really great show. We are talking about home ownership awareness, as June is Home Ownership Awareness Month. We have a very special guest by the name of Jamie Bowles. Maybe you guys have heard of her. She also goes by Madam CEO. She is the owner and founder of WJMS Radio, the very platform that you are hearing the According to RP show on. So I'm not going to get into all the preliminaries today, because Jamie and I go into an in-depth conversation about home ownership, the pitfalls, the joys, the highs, the lows. You definitely want to tune into that. But I will do a big up of the week. I already kind of alluded to it earlier when I said happy Father's Day, but I do want to give a huge big up to all of the fathers out there. It is so important to have men who are present, or at least trying to be present. And I emphasize on that because we know how it goes. Unfortunately, there are situations where fathers are trying and they keep being blocked, right? Whether it's, you know, from the mother of the child, whether it's from the community, whether it's from the legal system. So we do want to acknowledge those men who are trying actively to be fathers to their children. We want to acknowledge the father figures that are in the community, right? A lot of our men, unfortunately, are in predicaments that, you know, don't allow them to be present. But we have a lot of men, a lot of uncles, cousins, you know, friends of family, a lot of men in the community have stepped up to be role models to young men and women. And so we want to commend them as well too. Father's Day is also for you. It doesn't have to be your biological child, but if you're out there fathering children, being role models, being that support system for the men and women, for the youth in our community, you deserve that title. So happy Father's Day to all of those men out there. We appreciate you. We support you. We love you, even though sometimes society looks down on the men and talks down on the men. But we really do lift you guys up today. And it's not just for today, but since we're acknowledging Father's Day, we want to acknowledge you all. So for the womp womp of the week, because I felt like I had to give one, there was a lot of womp womp worthy things this week. This one, again, is one of those where I kind of need your support. I kind of need the audience participation. Now, Juneteenth was yesterday, right? So I hope that you all took some time to celebrate even a little bit for Juneteenth. The weather was a little bit off in New York City, so some of the outdoor events kind of got, thwarted a little bit. But I've been seeing a lot of commentary with respect to Juneteenth and how President Biden has officially signed an executive order calling for Juneteenth to be a national holiday, which means not just black people will be getting off, but white people, the oppressors, will also be, you know, enjoying a day off of work, a paid day off of work in many cases for Juneteenth. And a lot of people are not happy about that. And the overall sentiment that I've been seeing is that we, the Black community, would be celebrating Juneteenth regardless of if it was made a national holiday. In fact, I think in the list of demands from the Black community, a national holiday was not one of them, or at least if it was, it was not high in the priority list. So people feel that this effort to create this national holiday out of Juneteenth is another form of the government gaslighting the Black community, right? I've seen many comments that said, we asked for you guys to stop killing us. We asked for Black people to be treated equitably, right? We asked for, you know, better living conditions, better housing conditions, respect. We didn't ask for Juneteenth to be signed into law as a national holiday. And many are wondering, you know, where do we go from here? And so I kind of want to know what your sentiments are. Is Joe Biden and his administration the womp womp of the week for this Juneteenth move? Do you guys feel slighted at the fact that this was made into a national holiday and now the oppressors in them are also enjoying freedom on our day? Do you feel that this move will lead to other moves? Maybe he's not the womp womp of the week. Maybe this is the first of many. I just kind of want to know how you guys feel. I personally, I do think that we're being gaslighted, but this is nothing new. The Black community has always been gaslighted. I mean, look at what recently happened, right? There was a Asian bill signed into law, you know, with respect to the Stop Asian Hate. And although I am not for the violence of any group, I'm still waiting, I guess, for the Black bill, right? Where is the bill for Black people who have been oppressed, who have been slaughtered, who have been killed, who have been attacked, who have been discriminated against for hundreds of years, right? So I'm still waiting for that. And I'm not sure if I will see it in my lifetime. I would hope to, but I'm not sure. So this Juneteenth thing actually, you know, creates even more questions, I think, in many of our minds. I mean, me personally, I did not take the Friday before off for many reasons. One, because I prefer to use that day for another day. And two, Juneteenth was on Saturday. So I figured I would celebrate on Saturday. But there were a lot of people who were actually saying, you know, do not take off on, you know, the holiday, I guess, the paid holiday of Juneteenth. Work your day, get your overtime, get your floating holiday, and keep it moving. So I'm very interested in hearing what you all think about this, you know, national holiday now, Juneteenth, and what it truly represents. Is it a look forward for new things? Will we be getting some new things in the bag? Or is this just an attempt to kind of shut us up and continue with the status quo? So with that being said, we are moving on to the meat of the show. All right, everyone, I'm here with my very, very special guest, Madam CEO herself, Jamie Bowles. Jamie, say hello.
What's up, according to RP fans?
So, Jamie, there might be some people who have no idea who you are, although, it would be a shame, but, you know, it happens. We have new listeners every week. So if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, where you're from, and what do you do?
Absolutely. So for those folks who are unaware, I am, like she said, Miss CEO. I'm the founder and owner of WJMS Radio, which was started in December of 2015 as a way to combat the negative media that's in the world currently. So we try to focus on the positive side of things, current events, local heroes and sheroes that are making a difference, unsigned artists who actually have something good to say in their music. We give internship opportunities to students all across the country. We've reached over 150 different countries and over 115,000 listeners since we've launched. You know, we're still a small station, but we're growing. I also work full-time for Walmart, which is crazy enough as it sounds, but I'm a regional maintenance manager for Savannah, Georgia, and Charleston, South Carolina, which means I travel quite a bit to those places. And I every now and then host a show on my station periodically. Definitely not weekly, but it's as often as I possibly can. And I'm happy to be here with you today.
All right. It sounds like a lot.
It is. I honestly don't know how I make it happen and actually sleep and live my life, but it works somehow.
It has to work, right? It has to.
Right? I wouldn't be here if it wasn't.
So this week, we're going to be talking about home ownership awareness. And for those of you who've been tuning into the show, you know that I've said this on a couple of occasions, that June is Home Ownership Awareness Month. And I thought it was really cool this week to, instead of having a real estate agent or some sort of, you know, I don't know, wealth guru, that it would be great to have somebody who is from the Black community talk about their experience of becoming a homeowner. A lot of times, you know, we kind of want to know what the nitty-gritty is on the side of the individual who is purchasing the home as opposed to the one who is selling the home. So, Madam CEO herself is a homeowner, and so we kind of want to just take a deep dive into the world of home ownership, particularly for Black individuals, Black people, because that's something that homeownership is low, right, in our community. It's disproportionate compared to the other groups, right? And this is something that we've known for a while. Although I think that there's been a recent uptick, it's still not where it needs to be. And, you know, there are so many reasons for that, obviously, but the process has been a daunting experience for many. Just even thinking about owning a home, people, you know, start to shudder. So if you could just talk to us, Jamie, about your experience becoming a homeowner, maybe walking us through some of the steps, some of the things that you went through.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So my husband and I bought a house in December of last year. So we're just rounding our 6 month anniversary of being here in this house. And it was a roller coaster. Girl, this was more of a roller coaster than the radio station. Like, it was an up and down, exhausting process. And I only say that because it's like starting from the beginning. So I moved to Savannah in April of last year, and we started looking for a house around. We knew that we wanted to be out by the time our lease ended with On Base. And so we were trying to find a place before like January of 2021. Yeah. Trying to remember the dates. And so we were looking for a house, and we were, you know, finding all these places. And first of all, we had to talk about our budget range, because that was the most important thing for us, was figuring out, okay, what exactly are we comfortable with being in debt for a house? Mm-hmm. Like, we don't want a $3 million house. We're not looking for no $500,000 house. You know, like, what's that sweet spot that him and I could both agree on? And so we came to our conclusion with that. And then it became a matter of searching for houses, which is exciting but depressing all at the same time. And so, you know, we didn't go into it with this idea that we were just going to straight up get a realtor. Like, neither one of us was like, hey, who are we going to go through? We just were like looking at houses online. And, you know, because we had the Zillow app and we had rent.com and we had, you know, all these different places that we were checking every single day for places. And we were just looking, just trying to see, like, what kind of house can we get for our price range. And, you know, going into it fully understanding that, like, you know, it was a seller's market, which is another thing I'm going to talk about in a few minutes and how terrible it is to buy a house in a seller's market. But it was a seller's market, but also, you know, realizing that there's a potential that we could have the kids over here. They're currently in Germany, and there's a potential for us to maybe have them permanently. So we needed to find a house that could accommodate not just him and I, you know, and potentially an office space, but also room for two, you know, almost teenage children to move over when the time came. And so we had to figure that out. And what we were trying to do was find a place in Savannah that was, number one, a good neighborhood, and number two, that had a good school. Like, we needed to be in a good school district. Mm-hmm. So there were all these different things that, like, when I first was younger and was like, I want to buy a house, you know, you always have that dream of the white picket fence and, you know, owning the big backyard and all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. And like all these things, like these cliche items that you want in your house or whatever. But when it comes time to actually look and buy said house, like it is a totally different ball game. And I mean, there was times where I was just like, you know what? I don't even care anymore. Let's just stay where we are. Like I'm over this whole process. But it ended up where we ended up in the house that we're in and we love it. But it was a heartache. There was a lot of heartache because number one, we found houses that we loved and they didn't have a good school district, you know, or we found houses that we loved and they were out of our price range, or we found houses that we loved, or they were too far away from where either one of us needed to be to either get to work or, you know, get to what we needed to do. And so there was just all of this, like, you know, you get attached and you find, like, because the problem is when you look at these apps like Zillow and, you know, homes and rent.com or whatever, you imagine yourself in these houses. You know, mm-hmm. you picture how you're going to lay the house out, where you're going to put your couch. The TV can go on this wall. I can put a little reading nook over here. And you slowly fall in love with all these houses. And so we did that. I think I fell in love with 7 houses before we ended up in the one that we were in. And I got so upset and so disappointed that I was just like, I don't even want to do this anymore. And the reason was because, you know, seller's market basically just means that, and I don't know why all of a sudden everybody had money. I'm going to just segue into that. All of a sudden, in the middle of COVID, everybody had thousands upon thousands of dollars to throw on these houses over and above asking price plus closing costs. And we're like, where are people
finding this dough?
The money from, like, I was just so confused. I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. This is COVID times and people just have all this money. Like, what is happening? So it was a seller's market. And so that basically just meant that right now the market was saturated with people who are looking for houses, and the demand for houses was so high that people who are selling their houses, literally people who weren't even considering selling their houses, were like, oh shoot, I'm throwing my house on the market. I'm getting $50,000 and $60,000 over asking price, you know, like just off the bat. And it makes it very difficult for people, you know, especially Black folks, to get into buying a house, because it's like you go in there and you're like, okay, they want $249,000 for this house. Let's negotiate. You know, you go into there like, I'm gonna offer you $245,000 and you pay the closing costs. And like, we did that on a couple of houses and they were like, nope. Like all the offers got denied across the board for like probably 3 or 4 really gorgeous houses that I absolutely was like, oh my God, if we get this house, I'm going to like die of happiness. I'm going to run naked in the street. Like I just was so excited to have, you know, the opportunity to move into these places, and we got rejected left and right. And it was such an awful, awful feeling. Until him and I sat down, I was like, look, like this is a seller's market, and I don't care where it is that we want to live. If we're not going to pay the closing costs, we're never going to get a house, because all of these sellers are getting over asking price plus closing costs included. So why would they negotiate with us when we're offering less than what they're asking for and telling them they got to pay the closing costs in addition to it, mm-hmm. you know? And so we had to have a really hard conversation with each other to figure out, what do we want to do? Because for some reason he was adamant about not paying closing costs. And I was more or less like, we need to pay these so we can get a house. And so we were back and forth and we're back and forth. And we had this, we ended up with a realtor accidentally. And it's funny because like we were looking at houses and just putting in inquiries online mm-hmm. about them. Like, hey, we're interested in looking at this one. And this lovely lady named Christy got back to us on a house. And she showed it to us or whatever. I can't remember. Don't ask me what the house was, if it was great. I mean, we saw so many houses until they blurred together at this point. But it became a thing where like all the houses that we wanted to see seemed to be in the same general area. And she was kind of like the realtor for that general area. And so mm-hmm. she ended up just being our realtor. We were like, I guess we should just kind of make this official. And she was like, okay. And so she gave us the paperwork for us to fill out that lists her as our realtor, which basically just means that we'll see houses through her and she'll get a commission if we, you know, sign on to, you know, to any of these houses. And, but mm-hmm. she has the opportunity and the ability to negotiate with the owners, the renters, whoever, so that we can actually go to these properties and walk through them and see them and get the keys and all that kind of stuff. So we signed on with Christy and we went through the process. And I remember the house that we really wanted that wasn't this one. I mind you, we're happy in this house, but the house that we wanted that it was between this one and the other one, like we put an offer in on this house and it was funny because we put the offer in. I was like, okay, we're going to put the offer in. They rejected it. And we were mad. We were like, no, like we're not losing another house. We're going to get this one. Like we were pissed off. Right. So we're like, no, counteract it. So we countered it and came back. We were like, all right, fine. We'll pay your closing costs and we'll pay whatever the heck the price was that we agreed to. And I was like, okay, I was like, now this is like $10,000 more than what we were planning on paying. I was like, are you sure? And he's like, yeah, I'm sure. And I'm like, okay. So I sent the message to her and she's like, all right, I'm putting the paperwork in. Listen, 2 days later, I'm like, babe, I got good news. And he's like, I don't even want the house anymore. And I was like, what? And he was like, yeah, I don't even want this house anymore. I don't want to pay closing costs. Da-da-da-da-da. And like, he tried to flip flop. And I was like, you can't go back on the deal. Like, that's not how this works. You know, once you put the offer in and the owner accepts it, it's like a binding contract. You can't just say, oh, just kidding, I don't want to do it anymore. Like, that's not how this works. And so he was all mad because she accepted the offer that we countered. I was like, I asked you plain and simple if this is what you wanted to do. And you said yes. Like, what are we talking about? But it was just like, I know, like, I probably haven't answered your question, but it was just like such a back and forth, up and down, a roller coaster thing where it's like I think we probably looked at least 40 to 50 houses before we landed in the house that we're in now. Oh my gosh. It was just that the other thing was because we're looking at houses and we were finding houses that we liked, but they each had just one little thing that we didn't like, or like one thing that was just not negotiable. Like, the house is great, but the kitchen's small, or the house is great, but there's no backyard, or the house is great, but X, Y, and Z. And there was always just something that was like, there was deal breakers for us. Like, each of us had like our non-negotiable, this is what has to be in the house, mm-hmm. you know, wish list items. And all of the houses came like right up to it, but fell short in like one or two spots. And the houses that met it immediately and perfectly were houses that we lost out on in terms of bidding. And so it was really disheartening and we were getting really frustrated until finally I was like, why don't we just build a house? Like, why are we, like, we could just put the things in it that we want, you know, mm-hmm. like instead of trying to find a house that matches what we need, let's build what we want. And so we were looking at that for a little while, but a lot of the companies were like, oh, the house won't be ready until May of like this year. Like, so we would have only been in the house for a month at this point. And it just, timing wise, it wasn't working out. And then money wise, I think it was a slightly more expensive because you pay for the land, which is something I didn't realize. Mm-hmm. So when you build a house, you know, it's not like, you know, you go to Home Depot and you just pick out the shed you want and then they deliver it to the house. It's like you pay for the plot of land that you want. And then they build the house on top of it. So there's not necessarily like the closing costs don't really count because most of the time the realtor or whoever will roll the closing costs over and you know, make it so that you don't have to pay them when you buy a house outright like that. Mm-hmm. But you pay for the land. So it's like you're paying either way. You know what I mean? So it became something where we were like, well, we don't want to wait for the house and we don't want to pay, you know, over and above what we're willing and comfortable to pay. So we ended up in this house here. And I'm glad we did. But it was just like, the process was daunting, you know, like it started off as something we were just kind of happily gazing through Zillow and apartments.com or whatever, happily gazing through listings online to, oh, wow, we're actually going to look at houses today to, oh, okay, now we actually have a realtor to, oh, now we're actually putting offers in on places. And mm-hmm. it just happened really quickly, but it also was like a really stressful process because like, I don't think either one of us really consulted our family about what we were doing. Because I mean, if you think about it, the Black community, like you mentioned it earlier on the show, there's not a lot of home ownership in the Black community.
Yeah.
And so like, you know, we don't necessarily have a lot of role models to look at in terms of home ownership. And so we talked to a few people, but we didn't have that many people like as an outpouring from the community to reach out and be like, hey, Jamie and Frank need a house. Can you support or can you help? We just didn't have that network like that. So we kind of were going through a lot of this on our own and fumbling our way through the process, you know, rather than having people that we could reach out to for support and help in the whole process.
I'm listening to you go through all of this horror story, and I'm just like, I think I might stay with my little rental property.
Now, mind you, I'm conducting this interview with you in my gorgeous living room underneath my ceiling fan in front of my beautiful bay windows on my couch. So I say all that to say that, yes, it was a crazy process, but it was worth it at the end of the day to know that I own something, you know, and that we can, I mean, we have an HOA, but like I could do what I want with this house because mm-hmm. we own it. You know, we can build it. We can do what we want inside of it. It's our own little piece of the world that, you know, we're in charge of. And so that feels amazing. But the process to get here was very daunting, and it was very heartbreaking. And a lot of times where I was just like, I don't even care about this anymore. I felt like you. I'm like, man, screw this. Let's just stay on base forever. Like, I don't even care. You know, like, I was like, forget it. Like, I'll just stay with the sirens and the horns every morning. We'll just live on the military base. I don't even care anymore, because this whole process, I'm just over it. Like, it's not even fun anymore. And it got to the point where I didn't even want to look at any more houses. It was just like, yeah, we got to go look at this house this weekend. Like, it wasn't exciting, you know, because I was just like, I'm just going to like it, and then I'm not going to get it. So what's the point of going to go buy this house or look at this house?
And that's the part that sounds crazy, because, you know, something you said earlier, you know, we all have this idea of what kind of house you want. Like, right now, I mean, I'm not necessarily a house person. I'm more of a condo apartment person, but I do have a house in mind, you know, like, I know what it looks like if I were to ever leave, even if I didn't leave New York, but I think I've seen these styles of homes in New York anyways. But I have an idea of what I would want it to look like, thanks to the Housewives of Atlanta and some of these other shows that have given me this like vision of a house, right? That I don't know if I'll be able to attain it, but we'll see. But it's, I can imagine how crazy it is, you know, seeing all of these properties, seeing the one that you're probably in love with, and then not being able to get it for whatever reason, right? So I feel like anybody who is thinking about owning a home, they need to have this like mental preparation, right? Because I feel like if you're not mentally strong to go through this process, you will quickly crumble.
Absolutely. And I feel like, it's so funny, I hate to say this, but I feel like I'm real bougie, because like...
Girl, we like, all have a little bougie in us.
I go through these things where I'm like, no, I'm going to get this, and it's going to be like, most of the things I go through is like, I'm going to get it. It's going to be done. It's going to be easy. Boom, bam. Thank you, ma'am. Like, I'm all set. And like, the housing process was just so heartbreaking, because it was like, yeah, I had the same expectations. There was never an option for me to buy a house in New York. It was not going down. I wasn't paying $500,000 for a 2-bedroom that overlooks a brick wall. Like, I just refused categorically to spend the money in New York. And so I knew that moving down south meant I was going to get way more square footage, way more bang for my buck. And yeah, I had the Real Housewives of you know, X, Y, and Z city in my head. Like, I'm going to have a foyer with a chandelier. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to have like da 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 da, because that's what, how people live down in the South. Yeah.
Especially and I just knew in the Georgia area.
Yep. And I was like, and I just knew that that was going to be, you know, I was going to be like living like a queen. I was going to be like Beyonce Jr. down here in Georgia. And
not I had Beyonce like kinda, Jr.
Right. I had to like check my expectations at the door a little bit, because it's like, first of all, you can live like Beyonce Jr. If you want to live like that, just know you're going to pay for it. If you want to pay $500,000 for a house down in Georgia, yeah, you're absolutely going to be living in a mini mansion. But if you want to, you know, spend a regular normal person amount of money, like $250,000 or maybe a little bit more, you'll have a pretty average, good, decent, like really nice house. You know, like, it's not going to be Housewives of Atlanta, but it's definitely not going to be a 2-bedroom, you know, brick wall overlooking apartment in New York either. Yeah. You know, like, my house is, the house that we're in is gorgeous. There's high ceilings, and you know, it's really nice. We have a big backyard. Yeah, right. Big backyard, big front yard. You know, the neighborhood is nice. It's really nice. Is it Beyonce? No, absolutely not. But like, I don't need Beyonce. It's just me and him, you know? So it's like, a lot of this was checking your expectations at the door and realizing like, yeah, not everything that glitters on the internet is gold, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, you're seeing all these properties, and like, people are master photographers. I will tell you that, because I walked into some houses and I'm like, really?
That is not. They had the angles. The angles were on point.
Yep. You like, you have the audacity to put this on the internet looking like this and have the house look like this in person. It was, I can't tell you how many houses that I was like, and we're all set. Like, what? Oh my gosh. You know, but it was one of those things where, you know, it's not a process that's going to come easy, but if you have people in your network that have bought a house before, or people in your family or whatever, consult them, talk to them about it, you know, learn some of the ins and outs. And like you said, you need to be mentally prepared for the heartbreak, because you're going to see properties that you love, and it may happen that you don't get them, you know, or if you do get them, you may be paying tooth and nail. So just, you know, be realistic about your price and be realistic about your expectations.
Yeah. And I like that, because, you know, to be honest, like, if I ever do move to the South, although sometimes I question this move because I cannot deal with heat. I mean, we were just talking about this offline. It is 80 something degrees in New York, and I'm about to go jump in somebody's pool. I can't live like this. I'm eating ice chips. I have the AC on.
I'm eating ice chips. I've got cold towels on my head.
Listen, the heat is oppressive. The heat is oppressive and I can't deal with it. But, you know, in the event that I do move down there, I do have Beyonce senior vision only because I've been ruined by the damn housewives, but I do have a reality check situation going on too, because I'm like, who's cleaning all of this, right?
Yep.
Because I would to have a maid. I'd have to have Beyonce senior's whole like housing staff, because who's cleaning the pool? Who's like, I can't be like, I know Oprah, when she was talking about her house, this is like, I don't know, years ago, how she had a whole wing that she'd never visited. The dust mites are collecting, you know, but because it's Oprah, you know, she has somebody cleaning there. But I don't have that type of money to have, you know, the $500,000 house and a whole like, you know, maid service, right?
Yep.
So I do think the expectation thing, you know, I think especially a lot of us do not come from families that actually had like those kind of homes, you know what I mean? Like homes like that. So we might not really understand like what upkeep looks like. Like your boiler breaks, you're going to have to fix it, right? Like something happens with your roof, you're going to have to take care of it. So it's not even just buying the home and having the mental like preparedness to like search for a decent house. But then it's like, oh man, I can't just call the super to come fix this toilet bowl.
Yeah, you are the super. And the one thing they don't tell you when you own, when you, you know, purchase a home is that as soon as you sign that paperwork and move in, Home Depot and Lowe's now own your life. Like you will live, you will live in Home Depot. Like fun outings for you and the family is going to Home Depot. Like it's ridiculous. Like every weekend I got to go to Home Depot. What for? We need a new mailbox. Why do we need a new mailbox? Like, I don't understand. We need a pressure washer. For what? Like, it's just insane. And you just spend money on crazy things. And the other thing that gets you is you have to really read the paperwork, because there's a lot of fees involved with buying a house, stuff that we didn't even think was going to happen. You know, like you move into a house and you're like, okay, this is great. I'm going to pay the water and the electric bill and everything's going to be hunky dory. But there's like a trash bill down here in Georgia. So we have to pay for our trash service. What? And this is what gets me. We have to pay for trash service and it's extra if you want to recycle. I'm like, you mean to tell me that I got to pay extra money to do the right thing? Like, no wonder. And you will see around the neighborhood, there's only one trash can for most of these houses, because people are like, I don't recycle. Yeah, because it's like you got to pay extra money to get a recycling can. You know, we pay the money because we accumulate a lot of cans with the pets that we have. So we need to recycle. But I mean, there's all of these like unknown fees. Like there's the HOA fee, the house. If you live in a gated kind of community, there's an HOA fee that you're going to have to pay. And it's like, they come around, they come knocking. Oh, and I got this rude email. This is totally unrelated, but I got this rude email from my HOA that was like, it was like RE, weed control. And it was like, the weeds in your driveway need to be addressed or removed. I was like, who directly the hell are you? Like,
yeah, see, homeowner associations have notoriously ruined people's lives. I have a friend of mine who, again, things that people need to know before they move into communities. My friend, we went to law school together, very, very savvy person. But yep. So she, you know, they moved to Silver Spring, right? And they had this, you know, acres and acres. They had this huge, you know, huge house, huge whatever. And so, you know, she has small kids. So she, you know, went ahead and built a gate, like around, you know, a fence or whatever around her home. Well, apparently Homeowner Association came by and was like, this is not allowed. So where some people would have been like, damn, I got to take down this gate. She was like, I'm just going to become the president of the Homeowners Association.
Wow.
And she rewrote the rules and regulations. So her gate is still up.
That's one way to do it. That is one way to do it.
Yeah. But people need to know about that. People need to know about that. Because they regulate like even like the height of your grass, right? Like your grass can't be too out of control.
So yeah, and the Homeowners Association really is basically like mommy and daddy. Like, we give you this place, but you have to maintain it to our standards and keep it looking right. Like, you can't put certain types of mailboxes out. You can't have certain types of things out. You know what I mean? Like they regulate the appearance of the houses in the community. Like you're not allowed to park on the street overnight for long periods, like all that kind of stuff. So they regulate all that, but there's fees that come out from all different angles. It was like, you know, it's the fee for the HOA. It's the fee for the trash. Then it's like, you get the electric bill, then you get the water bill, and you're like, oh my God, the bills just keep on coming over and above your mortgage, you know? And then it's like, you have to be careful when you first buy a house too, because there's a lot of predatory companies out there that prey on the fact that you don't know what's going on, you know? Like, and I will say, like, even the best, most educated people, when you get a house, it's just like, you start getting mail. Like, you're like, what is this? And it's like, everything looks official and everything looks real. Like, you got to pay this tax and you have to pay that and you got to do this. And you're like, oh my God, we have $3,000 in taxes to pay. And it's like, a lot of times you just need to put a call into your realtor or to your mortgage folks and ask them, and they'll be like, no, that's fake, or don't do that, or don't do this. And it's like, how many people didn't think to call that mortgage company or their people and verify that this information is true and actually and real, you know? And it's, there's a lot of predatory paperwork that comes with buying a house that, like, people get scared into, you know, doing certain things because they're like, oh my gosh, I owe this. I don't want them to take the house away or do X, Y, and Z. And so they pay it and it's not real. You know, so
the
it's
scams.
It's, there's a lot of scams. There's a ton of scams. And then there's just a lot of spam that comes too. Like, you get people to knocking on your door. Somebody knocked on my door yesterday for Comcast. I'm like, yeah, I already have your service. Thanks though. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you get the knocks on the door from the solar panel people, and you know, it's just a lot of things that come with homeownership that people don't tell you, you know, fees and expenses that are unseen that you're like, oh, once you pay the mortgage, you're good. No. There's like 52 other things that are coming at you, and they always come at the same time, you know? So it's always scary to get the mail when you buy a house. Like, yeah.
So what can we do then? I mean, I'm listening to all this and I was just like, man, who do I need to hire to help me navigate this process? Because I feel like, you know, the average everyday individual might not have time for all of this, right? And a lot of the things that you're saying, some of the people have come across it through trial and error because, you know, nobody told them that, you know, if you move into a certain neighborhood, you know, with an HOA, that you can't paint your house pink, or that you need to have this or you have to have that. So, yep. I mean, and the last thing one wants to do, right, is to purchase a home in an area where they, where they're now restricted, right? They feel like, man, I can't do anything. So how do we, especially as people of color who may not have this generational knowledge of home ownership, how can we then, you know, navigate this process? Like, how can we get ourselves to the point where we are aware of these upfront costs, these backdoor costs, and whatnot?
I would say, you know, use me as a cautionary tale. Don't stumble through the process like I did and you know, I ended up okay, but don't stumble through the process, you know, by trial and error. You know, that's not necessarily how you want to purchase a house or get into this kind of contract. You know, it's a large contract that you're entering into and it's a serious one. So you want to make sure that you have as much knowledge as possible. I would say the best thing we can do is to go to these homeowner workshops and programs that they have for first time home buyers and really go to them and really attend and take notes and learn, because they're going to give you all this information that I gave you from trial and error and trial by fire. They're going to give you in the home buyer workshops. You know, like I said, him and I just kind of started looking at houses, and then all of a sudden we had a realtor. Then all of a sudden we were making offers. We never took the time to go through a home buyer workshop. And I know that if we had, it probably would have illuminated some light on a lot of the things that we, you know, got blindsided with the first month or two that we were living here. You know, it probably would have been like, oh, we expect this because X, Y, and Z, because we learned this in the home buyer workshop. But I would say take advantage of the resources that your community offers in terms of the home buyer workshops, and then get to know the areas that you want to live. You know, make sure you're familiar with the neighborhoods. You know, if you see neighbors out, ask questions about, you know, if they're happy where they are and stuff like that. And really just do your research. And I hate when people say do your research, because the last thing people want to do is research.
Yeah.
But it really is. When you're entering into a $250,000 or more contract with something, you want to do your research. You know, you don't want to be stuck with a house where you know, like you said, you're restricted in what you can do and you didn't realize it. You don't want to be stuck in a house where you have problems because, you know, you didn't do the proper paperwork beforehand, mm-hmm. or, you know, go through the homeowner inspection. Like, you really want to make sure that you do your research and you're 100% aware of what you're entering into when you purchase this house, so that there are no surprises. And any resources that people will offer in terms of classes are going to help you. So hop into them, learn about them. And some of them will even teach you about some of the tax credits that you get for being a homeowner, whatever they may be, whether you install solar panels and get a kickback, or I don't know if the first time home buyer credit is still available, but there's all these different things that come with home buyer or home ownership that, you know, can help you and benefit you in your taxes. So those home buyer workshops will educate you on those as well.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you pointed that out, because a lot of us do hear about these first time home owner workshops and programs. You know, again, sometimes it's through the grapevine, through friends, but it's kind of like, you know, you leave it alone because you feel like you can do it yourself. But one thing I know that you mentioned was that you ended up stumbling on a realtor. Did you find that having this realtor, you know, made the process, you know, 10 times easier than you guys going about it on your own? Because a lot of people are using Zillow, realtor.com, and all these apps to kind of navigate the process.
Oh my God. Yes. Like, it's not like, you know, you first, last in a broker's fee. Like, no, the realtor that we got was exceptional. She did a wonderful job. She was super patient, especially with him and I being so finicky about stuff and picky about everything. Like, well, we like this house, but we don't like, you know, the grass. So we don't like, you know what I mean? So she had infinite patience with us, and she took us on umpteen million housing tours where we would see like she was good where we would go and pick out like four or five houses that we were interested in seeing, and she would like map it out for us, and she'd be like, okay, so it makes sense for us to go to this house first and then go here and then go here, here and here to hit all the places. And she would set it all up, get it all situated for us, so all we had to do was follow her and then pull up in the driveway, and she would get the keys. And we would go in and we would tour around. She had all of the paperwork in a folder ready to go as to how much the house is costing, you know, what the closing costs might be, square footage, bedrooms, what's the HOA fee, what are your taxes going to be. She had all of that organized per location in a folder. And then on the fly, you know, as when we were looking at some of the newer builds, the ones that are just plots of land, she was able to take us to some of those houses that are being built to take a look at, you know, some of the model homes in the communities that we like. Like, if we like the McDowell unit, or we like the O'Connell unit, or whatever it might be called, she could take us to areas like that were near where we were and show us samples of those types of houses. Because there was a ton that we saw that we were like, oh, I was like, there was one that I'm like, yo, take all my money right now. I love it. Like, this is the nicest layout of a house I've ever seen, you know, in blueprint form, blah, blah, blah. I was in love with it. And I got to site and she showed us one in person and everything was medium. Like everything was small. Like, on paper, it looked amazing. I was ready to sign my life away based on the description of this house and like the picture and the blueprint of it. And when I actually went in person and looked at the house, I was like, oh yeah, no, this is awful. Like, this is not going to work at all. Because the bedrooms and the square footage was great, but it was just very small. You know, the way they put the walls into the space really made for small rooms and like large open areas. And we're like, what? Like, it just was, you know, it didn't work out that way. But she was really good at just making sure that we were organized, making sure that we hit all the places that we wanted to see, and getting them scheduled in time for us. And then just being able to take us to some impromptu visits when we showed interest in certain things. So having a realtor literally made our jobs like 20 million times better. And she did all the paperwork. You know what I mean? Like, she's like, okay, I'll put the offer in. I will, you know, do X, Y, and Z. Like, she literally did everything for us. So all we really needed to do was show up to closing with, you know, check or whatever in hand, ready to go and ready to sign. And everything was put together for us. So yeah, definitely get a realtor. Don't try to go it on your own. It's not worth it. Honestly, a realtor just is like they're there for a reason. Mm-hmm. I promise you, they're worth the money that they get on the commission. I promise you.
Yeah. So. Now, I'm glad that you pointed that out, because I know a lot of people, again, you know, I think I have a couple of these apps or whatever, these realtor.com and these Street Easies and whatever. Yep. And you try to go through them because you think, you know, well, how hard can it be? If I find a home, I visit it. But there's so many different aspects to it, you know, latent defects, you know, there's so many things that I think that people are not really aware of. And it's not like, you know, a pair of shoes where you buy, you don't like it. You're like, oh, let me return it the next day. Like, you know, selling a house, I would imagine, is not the easiest thing. Yeah, you know, so I definitely agree with you there that I think, you know, the realtors are there for a reason. It's not a hustle, because with everything that you've mentioned here, I'm like, if I cannot deal with any of that.
Yeah, I wouldn't even want to.
All the coins.
And that's what I'm saying. And like a realtor, for those folks that don't know what a realtor actually does, a realtor is kind of like the middleman between you and the property that you're interested in. So realtors have first line communication with the people listing the properties. Because when you list a property on Zillow or whatever, you know, there's usually a leasing company or a rental company, or there's a name associated with that property. They can call from their real estate firm, confirm with the person that they want to meet or they want to show this house to somebody on this date. They will give them the combination so they can get the keys. Because normally most of these houses have like a combination safe or whatever, where you can pull the keys out to visit. They'll communicate with that realtor to get that, you know, get you the combination for the keys so you can get the keys and visit, you know, set up the time so that if it's somebody who actually is still living in the house at the time, we had a few of those, make sure they're not there. You know, you don't want to be in the house when somebody's touring your house. Like, that's awkward as hell. Like, you're sitting in the living room and they're like walking around you looking at all your stuff. Like, no, thank you. So the realtor is the person that will help confirm all that for you, make sure you have the keys, make sure that you can visit, the house is empty, ready to go, and schedule it all out for you. It takes the ease out of it. I don't know why anybody would want to go around a realtor and have to try to put feelers out to these companies and to these people, you know, by yourself, you know, when you have somebody who literally can put it together for you and make it so that, like, it's literally like, consider a realtor like your Google Maps. Like, they're going to map out your day for you and take care of all the stuff in between. Like, you don't want to have to map it out yourself with paper. Like, let Google Maps take care of it for you. You know what I mean? Like,
well, some people, you know, the thing is that they're always trying to save coins. And I get it, right? Because the process of buying a home, like, you know, it'll take all your coins. It's an expensive process, especially if you didn't maybe prepare for all of these random ass fees that come out your way. But, you know, it's sounding like getting a realtor, you know, is necessary, and what you think you're saving in money, you might actually be creating holes for you where you're going to end up paying more than what you think you're saving at the end of the day. So
the thing is, you're not paying the realtor anything. The realtor never comes into your pocket and takes money out and says, hey, I showed you all these houses, give me money. That's not how this works. The realtor gets a commission for the sale when you purchase the house. So when you purchase your house, like say you bought a house for money's sake, say for $100,000, you purchase the house. The realtor will get like a 4% or a 3% commission off of that, which they then split with their company and all that kind of stuff. But they get a commission off of that. You never see that money. It never actually physically comes out of your pocket. You never see it. You know, it's one of those things where it's just kind of built into the process of buying a home. And it's very painless. You don't like, you're not like, hey, I don't want to give you this money. Like, you don't see it. It never hurts you. And the other thing too, that I forgot to mention is that realtors have access to properties and listings that we don't. So there are things that are up on Zillow, apartments.com, rent.com that are there. Yeah, that's great. But there's also brand new listings, stuff that haven't even hit Zillow and rent.com yet. And sometimes realtors can get access to those listings before you can and get you access to those properties first. And sometimes, you know, before they even go to these public spaces for public platforms or whatever for people to look at. And so they have the ability to plug you in to certain areas to get to properties that are not even listed, you know. And then the other thing is too, if you create a relationship with them and they know what you're looking for, then that's somebody else who's looking for houses for you. Because the realtor is going to also send emails to you and say, hey, I found these houses that match what you guys are looking for. And so they're looking, if you tell them, hey, I want to live in this neighborhood here or here, and I need X, Y, and Z to be in the house, they will look for you and they will filter you houses to look at. And if you like the ones that they select, then they'll set up appointments for you to go look at them. So it's like having a realtor is like having an additional person who's just helping you guys find the house that you want. And you don't see the money that they get paid come out of your pocket or come out of your paycheck, or there's no upfront cost. There should never be an upfront cost for a realtor. So if you're ever like, hey, the realtor's like, hey, I need money upfront for this service, you're getting scammed. Like, don't bother. Like, because all the money that the realtor gets, that's part of the process. All the money that the realtor gets is to help you close the home. You know, so like once you close your home on the home, that's when they get paid. You know, anything over and above that is weird and it's sketchy, because the only reason it makes the realtor work harder, because they want you to buy a house. They want you to close. They're going to try to make sure that you're happy and that you're in a place that you want, because it means that they get paid. They don't get paid if you don't get a house. So if you pay them upfront, you already paid them. Now, where's their motivation to work for you or to find you anything or to do anything at all for you, really? Because you already paid them. Yeah. You know, so it makes more sense that the money that they get is money that you don't see and that comes out the back end, because otherwise it would be the biggest ripoff in history, you know?
Yeah. No, I'm glad that you broke that down a little bit, because I do think that, you know, there is this weird and interesting misconception with what a realtor is, what they do, and that people feel like, you know, it's like, why do I got to pay somebody to like find me a house? Like there's this weird, I don't know what it is, but there's this weird thing about, you know, people giving realtors money, even when it comes to the rentals, you know, apartment rentals, right? People are like, I'm going to go about it myself. Like, I don't want to bring a realtor because I don't want to have to pay that fee. But if you looked at the ease of life when you bring in this realtor, I think that, you know, you would see that the money is nothing.
So, yeah. And like a realtor with home buying, absolutely. Definitely makes sense. 100% all about it. Let's do it. I was mad in New York when I found an apartment that I wanted to move into on my own. And I still had to pay first, last, and a broker fee to move in. I'm like, what broker, where? I didn't even use a broker. So like in those instances, then it's frustrating because it's like, yeah, I want to save that money. It cost me like $6,000 to move into my apartment in New York because they want first, last, and a broker's fee, which is basically 3 months of rent up front. You know, and so I was like, I didn't even have a broker. Nobody helped me find this property. I literally found it and reached out to the landlord on my own, you know? So it was kind of like frustrating to me to have to pay that kind of money. So I definitely understand. And I was of the same mindset, but it's not the same situation when it comes to buying a house. It's totally different. It's not like renting an apartment or anything like that. It's a whole nother situation.
Okay. So now, you know, I kind of want to segue to this last part. You know, we're talking about home ownership, awareness, and really, you know, the lack of, I guess, home ownership within the Black community. What do you think, as being, you know, a Black homeowner yourself, what do you think we can do to either raise more awareness and to get more Black people into this home ownership game?
So I think a lot of it has to do with the numbers. And I say that because when you look at the average rent that a person is paying in any given city or state, and you compare it to the average amount of mortgage that somebody is paying for their own home, usually the mortgage is sometimes a little bit less than what they're paying for rent. Mm-hmm. And so if you usually kick that knowledge to somebody and let them know, like, listen, you could be paying way less than that for the mortgage of a home that you actually own than paying rent to some random landlord who only ever comes here, you know, if the rent is late. You know, they never check on you. They never do anything else. You could actually own your own home and take care of all your stuff, you know, and have your own property and be paying that instead of paying rent. A lot of people, you know, they shy away because of the number. They're like, well, I don't have the money for the down payment. You know, that's kind of where it comes into. It's always a numbers game, I think, in the Black community, because we're disenfranchised a lot. You know, we're marginally paid, you know, a lot of us are unemployed. A lot of us are underemployed and stuff like that. And so we struggle with pulling together. Nobody has thousands of dollars in a savings account, just kind of waiting. You know, most of us, especially after COVID, you know, COVID tested all of our savings accounts, to be honest with you.
Yep.
And so it's like one of those things where, you know, the savings just isn't there and people don't, you know, they're too scared to enter into it because they worry about, you know, all the fees that I mentioned earlier in the show. But honestly, if I had to do it all over again, I would, because owning a house at the end of the day, and there is nothing like coming home to your own home. Like coming home to your own apartment feels awesome. Don't get me wrong. I used to love having my apartment and coming home to my apartment, but coming home to your own home is a totally different feeling. It's a peace of mind that nobody can take anything from, you know, like it's one of those things that you can't put a price on. Honestly, it just feels good and it's good for your soul. And I think it's the education that's lacking. I think if more people sat in on the home buyer workshops, like I mentioned, and got over the fear and the stigma of having a realtor and stuff like that, and realized that you're not going to have to pay for the realtor, like you're not going to really feel that money come out ever. I think if more people got around that and started to educate themselves more on the benefits of home ownership, I think that it would happen a lot more frequently. And I think that it would happen in way bigger numbers, but the problem is the education just isn't there. You know, we don't have conversations like this. We don't talk about it. And so that's where the breakdown is.
I see. So I definitely agree with you there. We don't talk enough about it. I feel like we need to talk more about it. And just, you know, having this conversation with you, right, definitely informed me a lot of the process, even though, unfortunately, you know, you had to go through some of the trial by fire. But I learned a lot from what I'm hearing. And I'm not just going to say, oh, I'm just going to take the notes from Jamie and be on my way. Now I'm going to say, oh, let me go find the next homeowner, you know, workshop so I can get even more information, get even more empowered. Because I think my friend actually sent me something yesterday that HUD, I think it was Housing, Urban Development, whatever. I can never remember the acronyms or whatever. They actually just revamped or I think updated some of their guidelines when it came to the FHA loans, the first time homeowners loans. So for those of you who are like me with either several degrees in areas that, you know, cost a lot, like doctor, lawyer, engineer, those of you who feel my pain, those of you guys, PAs, et cetera, that have loans that are too big to even speak of.
Yep.
Too big to even speak of. I can't even utter the numbers on this thing without getting sick. You know, a lot of us have unfortunately not been qualified for these first time homeowner loans, right? We had to go through the conventional loans because our debt to
income ratio.
Income ratio, is ridiculous because they're counting the student loans as our debt. But apparently, I don't know if this happened exactly yesterday, but I was sent the updated information yesterday, is that they actually are recalculating that. So it looks like many of us who might have steered away from owning a home because we didn't qualify for the FHA loans may be able to. So I would look into it. Like I said, I had the article, but I can't pull it up right now. But I know that this guidance came out. I received it yesterday at least. So definitely something to look into, especially again for those of us who shied away from home ownership because we owe too much.
Well, and I mean, the other thing is the home buyer workshops are going to tell you all that kind of stuff. They're going to give you resources that can help you fund, you know, the closing costs or the down payment, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff, and show you how they can, like, that's the thing. The first time home buyers workshop is there to make home buying a reality for people of all different backgrounds, ages, you know, monetary incomes, everything. They're going to help you and give you the resources that you need to make it a reality. You know, so that's why it's important to go to those classes. You know, I think if you don't hit those classes and you don't realize there's resources available, then you get stuck in this idea of I can't afford it or I don't qualify or X, Y, and Z. But there may be alternatives that you can consider.
Exactly. But I thought, like, when my friend sent it to me, because she had purchased a home several years ago, she didn't qualify because she's a lawyer. With you know, crazy amount of debt, but you know, she was excited when she sent it to me. She was like, "There might be hope." There might be hope. So I think a lot of people might have not even played themselves with these first time homeowners workshops because they're like, "I can't afford it," or "I can't do it because I have all this debt." So you know, now might be the time, everyone, to go back, reevaluate if you're truly interested, right, in owning a home. Because the other thing too is, I guess home ownership might not, I guess, be for everyone. I mean, there are people who are content because they're rolling stones, they want to move everywhere. So there's that aspect too, that, you know, I think the other thing within our community is, even though we have low numbers of home ownership, there's like a stigma, like, you don't own a home yet. Why are you renting? Why are you still renting? You're a professional person. And there's like almost kind of I don't want to say a stigma, but it's kind of like a judgment if you're not even considering it. But there are people who really, like, they want to travel every 2 years. They want to live in a different city. Somebody like that might not want to own a home. But I think for today's purposes though, I think this conversation was really, really helpful. It definitely is inspiring. I think it put a lot of things into perspective. So I hope everybody did, you know, pay attention. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the biggest thing I learned from today is to get on that first time home ownership buyer's workshop thingy.
Absolutely. Yes. And I think too, the other thing to consider is, you know, if you're somebody who does want to move a lot, You know, it doesn't mean you can't get a house. It just means that you may consider subletting or, you know, renting out or something like that. Yeah. So there's still options, you know, just because you're someone who's a little, you know, just flighty with the wind or gone with the wind. Flighty. Yeah. You're a little flighty. It doesn't mean you can't settle down and get some roots somewhere. It just means if you do, just make it a property, an investment property, you know, yeah. a property that you can then turn around and rent out, like maybe get a duplex, like buy a duplex and then rent it out. And then when you come back home or if you need a place to stay, when you're done flying around, you have a place to go, you know? So, but I think that home ownership is important regardless of how, you know, inconsistent you may be in terms of your mm-hmm. jobs and things like that. I think it's still important for us to own things because, you know, we get into the cycle where it's like, I don't have a house to move to. Like if my parents didn't leave me a house to grow old in with my children or anything like that, we don't have a house that's been in the family for years or for generations. Like mm-hmm. we don't have that, you know, like you see in some other communities and some other places. And it starts with us buying homes and with us yeah. creating that and creating that generational wealth. Because if you look at it, home ownership is building generational wealth, because what you're doing is you're passing down an asset that's going to grow hopefully mm-hmm. over time to your children. You know, and the children will pass it on and so forth. And all that is doing is creating generational wealth for your family and making sure that your family is not one that's back in that same cycle that, you know, a lot of us are kind of stuck in. So,
yeah, no, I think that is definitely a great point. And I think that, you know, the investment property definitely is an angle that people could look into. And I've been hearing about groups of people who have gotten together to kind of purchase, you know, whole areas and acres and towns down south.
Yeah.
Just for that purpose. And they have no intentions of actually moving, you know, to this area, but the opportunities that it presents them, you know, not just for them, but for their families, is tremendous. So, I definitely think that, you know, if you have the means to do so, you know, look into that, you know, maybe team up with some of your trusted friends. I emphasize trusted.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, money is enough to break any type of relationship. But yeah, no, I definitely think that that's definitely an important point to make as well too. It's not just about your living home, right, where you're going to reside, but it can be an investment property. But the point is to try to own something.
Yep, because if you don't own something, you're getting owned. So
getting owned, we have to hashtag yep. that.
you're either gonna be an owner or you're gonna get owned. It's one or the other.
That is true. That is true. Oh man,
own or be owned. There's the hashtag. There's the hashtag.
Owned. To own or not to own or to be owned. I don't know. I think I went too far with that one. But either way, I was trying to have a little Shakespearean flair, but
I see what you tried to do.
It fell flat. It fell flat. I can admit that it fell flat. We'll try again next time. Think about it a little longer.
Right.
This is why I'm not a rapper, guys. This is why I'm not a freestyle rapper. Oh man, either way, thank you so much, Madam CEO Jams, for being on the show today. It's always a good time when you come on, of course. I mean, it's a Sagittarian connection. I mean,
it is. I love coming on your show. It's always a blasty blast. So I appreciate the invite and I appreciate the conversation for sure.
Of course. Looking for the next topic for you to come back on again, because this was very enjoyable.
Yeah, I always got something to talk about.
Something up the sleeve. Something going on. All right, then. Well, again, thank you, Miss Madam CEO, for being on the show today. I think that everybody did at least pick up. If you didn't pick up one gem, then I don't know what you're doing.
Right.
In your life, right? Like, what are you doing? But I really appreciate it. And I just want to thank all of you again for tuning into another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I will talk to you guys next week.
You were listening to According to RP on WJMS Radio.
About time you tuned in.
Tune in each and every Sunday.
I can't wait to come back.
7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
It's all online.